Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th of August, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, your coffee shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And let me start by congratulating Redcliffe on being the winner of our final, last, and ultimate and Super Anti-Spyware giveaway. We've now given away, what, 4 or 5 copies of it and made at least one person happy, I hope. And I want to thank the folks at Super Anti-Spyware for allowing us to do that. It was nice of them.
Very nice of them.
They like us. They really like us.
They really
like us. That's scary.
Yeah. One of the world's most evasive digital arms dealers is believed to have taken advantage of 3 security vulnerabilities in popular Apple products in its efforts to spy on dissidents and journalists. Investigators discovered that a company called NSO Group, an Israeli outfit that sells software that invisibly tracks a target's mobile phone, was responsible for the intrusions. The NSO Group's software can read text messages and emails and track calls and contacts. It can even record sounds, collect passwords, trace the whereabouts of the phone user. In response, Apple on Thursday released a patched version of its mobile software, iOS 9.3.5. Users can get the patch through a normal software update. Apple fixed the holes 10 days after a tip from 2 researchers, Bill Marzak and John Scott Railton, at Citizen Lab at the University of Toronto's Monk School of Global Affairs, and Lookout, a San Francisco mobile security company. We advise all of our customers to always download the latest version of iOS to protect themselves against potential security exploits, said Friend Saints, a Lookout spokesrobot. In interviews and manuals, the NSO Group's executives have long boasted that their spyware worked like a ghost, tracking the moves and keystrokes of its targets without leaving a trace. But until this month, it was not clear how exactly the group was monitoring its targets, or who exactly it was monitoring. A clearer picture began to emerge on August 10th when Ahmed Mansour, a prominent human rights activist in the United Arab Emirates, who has been tracked by surveillance software several times, began receiving suspicious texts. The messages purported to contain information about the torture of UAE citizens. He, of course, did not open that email. He did not open the email. Well, he opened the email, but he didn't click on the link. He did not click on the link. This is a very important thing. look, this exploit hasn't been used against the general population yet, but now that it's out there in the wild, so to speak, it's only a matter of time. So update your iPhone. And even after you've updated your iPhone, if you get a text message or an email message from someone who you don't know and it has a link in it, do not click on the link. Do not click on the link. Do not seek the treasure. Okay.
You think they get the point?
No, they don't. No, because I get a dozen calls a week. I think there's something wrong with my computer. What happened? Well, I got this email message and I clicked on a link. Why did you click on the link? Well, it was there, apparently. There's some sort of power in seeing the blue underlined text that forces your hand to move the mouse to it and click. So don't do that. Do not do that. And make sure you update your iPhone immediately if you haven't updated it yet. Everybody should have the update by now, but let's face it, there's a billion iPhones out there. So it may have taken Apple a day or two to get to you because they're not going to update everybody at once because their servers would go down.
And the 9.3.4 update came out last week to fix a huge set of problems that Cisco found and reported.
Right.
So if you think you ran the update last week, it doesn't matter. Run it again this week.
Right, because it's a different update.
You need 9.3.5 now, the newer one.
Right. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that would be bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is iPhone users are urged to update software after security flaws are found. And the choices are, I updated mine, I'll do it this weekend, I'm living on the edge, baby, and I what now? And so far we've got 30 people, of course, most of you are saying I what now, but at least five of you have indeed updated yours. Those of you who said I'll do it this weekend, do it now. Now is the time. Now is the time. And living on the edge, bad idea. Bad, bad idea. And I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down to the right, on the right-hand side, under Fascinating Stuff, the first link there is the forums. And the second forum down is poll discussion. And at least right now, the top poll discussion is 27 August 16th. iPhone users urged to update software after security flaws are found. Only two people are talking about it right at the moment, but I'm sure there will be many more of you who will jump in as time goes on. And of course, you can always give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And this was a zero-day exploit, meaning people were already exploiting it in the wild before Apple found out about it. With the Cisco update last week, Cisco found it, told Apple, let Apple fix it before coming public, which is the way responsible developers do it.
Right.
So some irresponsible guy found a bug and exploited it. Yeah.
The NSO was using it in the wild.
Yep.
And when Apple found out about it, they patched it as fast as possible. But, of course, they can't patch something they don't know about. And,
right.
And I suppose we could say, you know, they should find it. But, yeah, in a perfect world, sure. Sure, absolutely. But that's not the way it happened. Absolutely updated, as our Chandra says. This is kind of important. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dennis. What's up?
Logical question, then.
Yeah.
What about those of us who have a 4S and we still haven't gone past the iOS 8 something because the phone, I've read the phone would run way too slow. So what are we supposed to do? Get a new phone?
Yes.
that's Apple's solution, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, always upgrade.
It's possible that iOS 8 doesn't have this bug. We don't know because they don't test anything that old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that could be a possibility. If we dig into the article more, it may tell us how far back the bug went. Sometimes we run into this. There was one on that Apple fixed earlier, and it was a Windows issue too. There was the problem with the way TIFF images are processed, and TIFFs go back 30 years. They were the standard for scanned images forever.
Right.
Pretty much replaced by GIF and PNG now, but most computers and devices will still render a TIFF if you tell it to. And there was a TIFF bug that's been around for 30 years that someone found and told people, and all the developers patched it. But, Windows isn't going to fix it for 95 and XP. I think they fixed it for 8 and 10.
Right.
But, sometimes that's the risk of running on the older operating systems. Sometimes you're lucky and the old OS doesn't have that bug. Sometimes you're not lucky and you can't update.
Right.
I can't be the only person in the world who has a 4S.
No, lots of people have older phones, and they're perfectly happy with them. But they remain vulnerable. That's like all the people who seem proud that they're still running XP. Well, yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
But it's very vulnerable.
It's got more holes in it than Swiss
cheese. I understand being happy with what you have and not wanting to update. I absolutely get that.
Mm-hmm. So you end up being much more vigilant. Never open an email, even from someone you do know, because it may not be from who you do know. For the 4S, at least, it can run iOS 9, and they have addressed some of the speed issues in the problem that we often see putting a new OS on an old device. But they have addressed a lot of those speed issues.
Well, that's interesting. I could try iOS 9. I mean, yeah.
Right.
Whatever you just said.
Yes.
9 on my, and it might work.
Yes.
Can I roll back if I need to or not?
Not easily, because they don't security sign the old OSs anymore.
Right.
Okay.
You may be able to restore from a backup, but I don't think you can restore the OS that far back.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Thanks. Yeah, everybody runs into it. Like I said, there are the people who are still who seem actually proud that they're still running XP.
And I haven't been exploited yet.
That you know of?
Yes. Yes.
Well,
you
no.
Have.
I had a customer. I had a customer bring in a laptop XP.
Yep.
And they said, "Well, can you speed this up a lot? You know, it's just running slow." I said, "I can do the best I can." You know, and I got it cleaned up quite a bit because they had all these toolbars and everything else. I says, "And you know what? This is the best it's going to get." You know, you can't expect much out of an old system.
It's like bringing somebody an AMC Pacer and saying, "Can you turn this into a Lotus?"
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
Yes, for $1 million.
Right.
Because
actually, that was on Top Gear this week. They took an old car, put $1 million into it, and got a modern, you know, 1950 Jag with everything new in it. It was only $1 million.
Well, like I say,
£1 million.
He was booting it up, and he goes, "Well, yeah, it does look quite a bit faster, but can't you speed it up more?" I go, "Yeah, with a brand new machine. Why don't I spend the money?" I said, "Well, then, you know what? This is the best the Celeron gets."
Yeah, exactly. There, you know,
it's
you're
a Celeron chip set, you know, in this old PC. And, I, you know, it was one of those I had to take downstairs and blow out because all the breadcrumbs and everything else, you know, the meal from a while ago was still in there. And I had to get rid of that. It's like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Ain't going to happen. I mean, you can't.
At some point, you run up against this thing we like to call physics. You know, it's only going to be so fast. You can't move any faster with this technology.
My grandfather used to always say, "You can't make silk out of a sow's ear."
That's exactly right. Can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. Absolutely.
And you can take your current computer, keep the chassis, and just replace the logic board and the hard drive and the graphic card and the processor. And it's still the same computer then, right?
Right.
It's just a whole lot faster.
Not on a laptop, you're not going to.
Much harder on a laptop. Yes.
Right, right. Right. Who was Abraham Lincoln? He said, "I still have my grandfather's axe. It's had 3 new heads and 2 new handles, but it's still my grandfather's axe."
Well, I also had somebody come in and wanted to change out the video card in the laptop. I go, "You can't do that." "Well, why not? Don't they have just parts in there you can snap in and snap out?" I go,
"Yeah, no.
Not in video. They're all on board, as this is a USB and everything else."
This is the other thing I don't understand is why people who don't ever move the computer buy a laptop. Laptops cost more money and are less upgradable.
Mm-hmm.
Spend less money, get a more flexible device.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not going to move it anyway, why not do that? I don't understand why people don't do that.
We've started seeing a trend in the last year or so where it used to be, you know, laptops outsell desktops like 70-80% to one. 70-80% for laptop. But now we're starting to see people are going back to the desktop, you know, screaming fast quad processor on a desktop, and then a tablet for when you need something portable.
Yep.
Or a Chromebook for when you need something.
Well,
and you end up paying less typically than you would for a powerful enough laptop to be equivalent in speed to the desktops. Because typically your laptops are less powerful than an equivalent desktop at the same price because they have to have smaller components, less power hungry, less, you know, heat generating, which means they're less powerful.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the laptop, you pay at least a 30-40% premium
for a battery
to have it portable. Exactly.
So take that money and buy a couple hundred feet of extension cord.
Right.
Or you get an inverter in your car. You know,
well,
50 bucks.
I ask people that all the time. What should I buy? Do you ever move the machine? No. Well, you should get a desktop. I don't want a desktop. I want a laptop. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because
that's
it's
what
more
their buddy has.
Convenient.
Yeah.
No,
portable.
It isn't. You're not going to take it anywhere. There's no convenience to be had. And you can swap. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. No.
And
not going to win that argument.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You might as well talk to the wall.
3 times in your life, you're going to take it to a dealer to fix. You know, it's easier if it's a laptop. I get that. And it costs you, you know, maybe a couple of $100 more. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then they always come up against the reality. Well, I don't want to spend that much. Then get a desktop.
Yeah.
But I should have a laptop. No, you shouldn't.
And around and around it goes.
And then around and around you go. Now, we just found out, by the way, that Chromebooks now have a life expectancy of 5 years. Google is not going to guarantee that they will maintain the upgradability of a Chromebook that's more than 5 years old, which means I have to go home and try this because my original CR48, the reference model of the Chromebook that I have, is now 5 years old. It came out in June 2011. So I have to go see that. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I should probably finish this, the phone number.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 1-800. And that partial score, Raiders 6.
Yeah. 1-6.
A Windows 10 update, this is actually my favorite story. A Windows 10 update has stopped many popular webcams from working. The update, released earlier this month, stops many cameras from being used for Skype or to broadcast and stream footage. The cause seems to be a change in the way Windows 10 handles video, so it can be used by more than one program at a time. Microsoft said it was working on a fix, but has not given any date for when the patch will be available. Soon after Windows Update 1607 was distributed in early August, many people started reporting webcam problems to Microsoft via its support site. The trouble affected both webcams connected via USB cables or on the same network and meant either that footage could not be streamed or that images froze after a while. The problems even affected webcams working with Skype and Link, both companies owned by Microsoft. Comments on the support thread suggest millions of people have been inconvenienced by this bug. Some companies said customers who used webcams for internet banking had complained because they could no longer verify transactions. Analysis put the blame on changes to the video encoding system, which Apple 10 uses. The update ends support for two widely used encoding systems, so it became possible for more than one application to use video as it's being shot. So you could both stream and record video. prior to the update, Windows 10 only allowed one application access to a stream. A Microsoft camera engineer who responded to complaints on the support thread said the company had done a poor job of letting people know about the change. We dropped the ball on that front, so I'd like to offer my apologies to you all, he said. He added that Microsoft was working on a way to fix the problem and get webcams working again. The fix is likely to be released in September. Changes to the way Microsoft handles updates also seems to have made the problem harder to fix. Prior to Update 1607, Windows 10 users could roll back to a previous version within 30 days of it being installed. The update cut that to 10 days, giving people little chance to switch back to the earlier version of Windows 10 under which their webcams worked. Has your Windows 10 camera stopped working? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free. 1-800-790-0415.
So they went from one stream to zero streams. That's only a difference of one.
That's right. I don't know what people are complaining about.
you didn't want that feature anyways.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Did you see that email I sent you about the Windows accessibility thing? Apparently.
Yes, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah. No, you were gone.
I was gone that week. Yeah, and I'm going to post it. Apparently, with the new Windows 10 anniversary update, they've added more accessibility features for people with disabilities and are continuing to allow Windows 10 free upgrades for those customers. And so I'm going to post this link.
So as long as you tell them you need assistive technologies.
Right. And it works with the third-party stuff, but JAWS and some of the other things Dave has talked about.
Shoes.
But they're adding more inside of Windows itself, too.
Right.
So that's some for those of you that missed that, for the general
who
public.
Who only had a year
to
do it and missed it.
Mm-hmm. you can use these assistive technologies. Because sometimes you were waiting for those third-party programs to update.
Yeah,
to
before you could get them, yeah.
Before you could get it.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hiya, Pat. What's up?
Oh, okay. I just put my headset back on, I guess, on the radio.
Yep.
Okay, looking at my calendar, it seems to me that the Rochester Googles will be meeting this Thursday. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, this is my memory-based calendar, and I know we've had our disagreements about that, but it was working for me this month, so I guess I'll be there Thursday.
Well, excellent. Glad you will be. At least I think that's this Thursday. It's the first Thursday of the month, so if that's this
That'll
Thursday, we're on our way.
September 1st is a Thursday.
There you go. I will be late to the meeting if I get there at all.
Okay, I'll mention that when I'm there.
Thanks, because I'm teaching now, and my office hours extend. No, this is not. This is, wait a minute. Oh, that's last
September.
Week. Yeah, September. Here it is. Look at you. So.
Our birthdays are coming up, so that.
And so, including the show, by the way. Yeah.
All four
Rochester
of us.
Next
Googles
weekend.
Yep.
It's the show birthday.
Yep. Rochester Googles meets the first Thursday of every month at St. John's Meadows. And so if those of you, there's a, of course, a Google Plus group. There's also a Facebook group. So if you want to join us and chit-chat about all things Google, that's where we meet once a month. And Pat is absolutely right about that.
Okay. I want to let you do a commercial first of all until I get to my question.
Okay. What's
I've
up?
I've noticed something recently with my, my new Droid Max 2.
Yeah.
I click on the settings button, and when I click on storage and USB, it doesn't show the SD card. But if I turn the machine off, turn the phone off, and actually doing this in real time, but I can tell you what happens. I turn it off. We obviously wait a few seconds. It comes back on. The card is visible under the settings and the storage. Any thoughts on why that might be?
I'm wondering, okay, what version of Android OS are you running?
Okay, it just came back on, and when it gets off the big M screen, I'll ask you how I would know.
So is it not showing up in File Explorer, or where?
Well, okay, let me just wait till all the swishing goes on.
No. You shouldn't. Where does it not get recognized?
When I have to go through the sequence that I did. Under settings, there's a USB in storage, and it shows up there. I don't know, like with a regular desktop computer, of which I'm sitting right in front of mine now because I don't have to move it anywhere. So I was listening earlier.
Yeah.
I know I do the Explorer and all that with a desktop, but I don't know how to do something equivalent with the phone.
Yeah, there should be an app called My Files. What phone do you have?
I've got the Droid Max 2.
Okay, you may have to download it from the store.
Okay, it's called My Files, you said?
Yeah, there's a dozen of them, but the one I happen to use is called My Files.
Okay,
and it should show under local storage both device storage and the SD card.
Yep, it does.
Okay. Right. I will look for that after we get off the phone. But any thoughts about, let's see, this has been on for a few seconds. And I'm going to click on settings and storage and USB. And now it shows up. And I have a feeling I'm not going to keep on the phone that long, but I have a feeling after a few minutes it kind of goes away. Any thought on why it would just be temporary? Is there any kind of setting I could have done to preserve battery length that would have kept it from recognizing an SD card?
I would be more concerned it's the hardware failing. So
when
you start it up, it knows it's there, but then it dies while it's trying to read it. And shuts it
down.
So
I should take it back to the store and have them take a look at it.
Now, are you actually talking about some sort of USB device you plugged in, or are you talking about the SD card?
I'm talking about the SD card, but the actual, I'm reading this stuff literally here from the screen.
Right.
The
it calls it, right. I just want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah. But it is definitely the SanDisk SD card.
There you go. I was just about to say, you don't happen to have a SanDisk Ultra 10 32 gig card, do you?
Well, there's 29.71 gigabytes available on it.
So it's probably a 32 gig card. People have a lot of problems with that particular card. Sadly, it may well just be the card.
Okay, so I think I'll just go down to Verizon and have them put a card in for me. I thought I'd save a few bucks and buy a card someplace else and put it in. And
well, you can do that as well. I mean, everybody sells cards. You can get them online. You can get them at many local retailers. And
What brand would you suggest? Anything but SanDisk? Or
SanDisk
is
usually good. It's just this particular card doesn't like this particular phone, and that's
right.
Always a crapshoot.
So that means if I got a bigger, like a 64 gigabyte?
Well, a different SanDisk card might be fine. You know, as Steve said, it could be hardware, so it could, I suppose, be the connector for the card, but the cards aren't that expensive anyway, so if you put in a different card and it works, you win. And if not, well, you've now got a great card for your next phone.
Yeah, all right. I will follow your suggestions, and thank you very much for your help.
All right, good luck.
Yeah, take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
I wonder if it might be the card reader. If he tries that card in a different device, that would...
He's still on.
Pot that down, Dave.
Pot him down, Dave. Thank
Sorry.
You.
As Dave rushes to the phone for the next call.
Yeah, exactly. it's possible, but it's the internal card reader.
Yeah.
Right, so...
But you can't really change that easy.
You can't change that very easily, but yeah. The other part of the problem, of course, is we find people all the time who got a little impatient putting it in and jammed it. Those connectors aren't very tight. I mean, aren't very robust, right? So you got to be a little careful when you're doing that to make sure that it's not that you don't flex it too much when you do it. Some of them have it's very clumsy to get it in cleanly.
Well, like I told you on mine, I could have gotten a 256 gig SD card for mine, but it's like it's a 64 gig foam storage wise. And it's like, no, I don't need it. Because for the most part, I store everything up on the cloud.
Right, right, right.
And that's the best way to do it.
The only time I ever needed all that storage is when we took a cruise. Because we didn't have a network connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed that much space for all the pictures I took. But that was about it.
All right. It almost feels like you're supposed to put those cards in and never touch them again. Because they feel so... flaky trying to put them in and out too many times.
Yeah, exactly right. You tend to want to leave them in. And of course, the good news is those things will last for a long time. So if you do get a bigger one, you can always move it to the next phone and the next phone and the next phone.
Yep.
Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. I was out of town last week vacationing in the Hudson Valley, so I haven't listened to the show via the podcast. And you had a gentleman on from Williamson, Tom.
Okay. Yes.
Had a problem with the Seagate dashboard.
Yep.
On his Windows 7 machine.
Yep.
And I had pretty much the same problem with that particular software. And that's a very buggy piece of software that I found.
Yeah, it sure is.
And then when I got a new drive, which is the same as his Seagate Backup Plus Slim drive, I got a 1 gig drive, and they put that software on the drive, and then you find out that if you're using Windows 10, it's not even compatible.
Right.
And Seagate got a whole. I got a whole Seagate, and they basically said, "Well, you're SOL because we're not updating it, and probably not going to make any further, pieces of software like that."
Yeah,
it's probably written by a third party contractor, and they're not updating it anymore, and so they don't care.
Yeah, right, they've got new products on the market, and shut up and buy one.
Yeah, and I noticed that also they had that Seagate dashboard on my old drive, and they also had a piece of software that I used that's called Seagate Manager, which worked great on 7, which did incremental backups and changed on your hard drive. And I noticed that it's not Windows 10 compatible, but it will work with that Slim drive. It doesn't recognize my old drive that it came on. So I can't make any changes. It still backs up to it, but I can't change anything. I can't add any new files to it. But it does work with the new drive, so I can't figure that out, that it's not even, that's not Windows 10 compatible, but yet it will work with the new drive.
Right, and yet you should be able to get to it from the web browser interface, but that's, you know, you can still update stuff there, but now it's a manual process.
Ah, okay. Yeah, because it doesn't recognize my old Seagate drive, but this old piece of software recognizes the new one, so.
Yeah, I've got a Seagate Personal Cloud, it's called, the one that I've got, and the lovely thing about that is that you can access it over the network via a couple of, you know, like a FTP type, SFTP protocol.
Oh, okay. Well, this drive is not a network drive that I have. It's a USB 3.0
drive.
Yeah. So, but I just thought I'd throw those little tidbits out there that they're not doing anything with that software anymore. And they're not even going to include backup software as far as they told me.
Via
email support on their hard drives anymore.
Right. And I've always wondered why the companies bother anyway. You know, Western Digital and Seagate and Toshiba, they all have backup programs they throw in with the drives. There are so many other good backup programs. You know, why do they bother with the time and expense to make something like that? Well, I suppose because it's convenient to the end user. But when it's not and they don't update it, it makes it worse.
Yeah. I found that Seagate Manager was just a great little piece of software, simple to use.
Yep.
You know, a dummy like me can figure it out.
Right, and now you have to go through the trouble of finding a better product.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
I've tried the free ones, and I think they're much more convoluted than that piece of software.
Yep.
So, but there's my 2 cents. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Yep.
Yeah, he's right. You know, everybody, and you're right, Steve, everybody throws that stuff in there, and half the time people don't use it. Half the time it doesn't work anymore. When they get tired of it, they stop updating it.
Yep.
You know, the drive still works. Why not the software? Well, it's easier for them to abandon an old piece of software on an old piece of hardware than it is to keep paying somebody to update it.
We've had some interesting stories about people who didn't know they had to install the software to make the drive work. One person hadn't even taken it out of the box yet and was mad that it didn't back up their computer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, you sort of have. And then we had this one nice lady. She sat down, opened the box, read all the instructions, pulled all the wires out, plugged it into the computer, and the computer died. If she hadn't have bothered reading the instructions, she could have had the backup done by now.
Right. All right, we're going to take a short break. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 41 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we've got Henry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Henry. What's up?
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This question actually comes from my sister down in Florida, so I can describe it.
Have your sister call for herself.
And then we can see where we go from there.
Yep.
She apparently uses Yahoo Mail, and years ago, her problem is with the screen that pops up that gives you a list of the messages where then you click on one to open it up.
Yeah.
Apparently years ago, as a result of one of these suggestions that pops up every once in a while, she got that listing screen changed so that instead of being black text on a white background, it went to white text on a black background. You know what I'm saying? Is it inverted?
Yep.
And the thing is that it apparently only applies to that screen. If she clicks on a message, it then goes back to black type on a white background. So it's only the listing screen that changed. She has a visual problem. She found that slightly easier to read, so she was fine with it for all these years. But now her vision's getting worse. She's started to use a Zoom text, which will handle this, but she's got to tweak it every time she wants it changes. So she'd like to change that listing chain, that listing screen, back to its normal black on white. But she remembers that whenever she changed it, it gave the, you know, if you want to change it back, here's how to do it.
Yeah.
She doesn't remember how to do that. And she says she's looked through the settings screen, the settings and the view menu, and but she can't seem to find it. And I don't have Yahoo Mail, so I haven't been able to find it either. I heard Steve, I think, last week mentioned that he had Yahoo Mail, and I thought he might have an idea.
Yeah, I'm logged into it now. It's probably somewhere in themes. In the gear menu, there's a settings and a themes.
In themes.
Yeah. The themes changes the colors of the text and the background, and you can put a picture behind your email.
Yeah. That white that text on background, what is that contrast, or is that brightness, or what is that called? I
don't see it exactly, but I'm guessing it's a theme.
So you're thinking she selected a theme?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me. Sadly, when we started talking, I clicked on Yahoo Mail, and it's still waiting.
At least I got in.
Yeah, at least you got in.
Why would it only affect that one screen, though? I mean, it doesn't affect the messages, doesn't affect anything else, just the listing screen.
That's how that theme is defined.
Okay.
Right. That's what I've got. I've got black text. White text on a black message. So if I click on that, it comes. This is exactly what she's seeing.
Yeah, go to your gear menu and change the theme.
Okay, I want to close this. And if I go here, and the very first thing under the gear menu is themes, and I can pick different themes. And the one I picked. In my case, I don't know what the name is because God forbid they give you a name, but it's a black screen with a little carrot and a blinking cursor. It's some sort of old fashioned.
It's
CRT.
It's an old terminal window.
Right, yeah. Right. it's the old terminal window, right. So you should be able to pick a different color scheme, and that will give you an entirely different.
Including
setup.
Yeah, including just plain, you know, white and plain blue. You don't have to have a color or photo behind it. But,
right. But you can put a photo behind it, you can do anything.
That's kind of cute.
Really
now
just,
I have terminal.
Now you have terminal. So now we've made Steve happy.
Yeah.
And to make your sister happy, I believe, to stop giving me things to do. All you have to do is change the theme to something else. Not a big deal.
Okay, so you're saying it's in the themes.
Yes, in the gear menu under themes.
Yeah, do you know what the default theme is called on there?
No. None of them have any names.
They just have pictures.
It's going to make it a little difficult for her because
she's
using the Zoom text, so it likes to do text.
Yeah.
What she's going to see is a list of pictures or just colors for the background.
If she goes you want the first column, third row is plain white.
What I was going to suggest is if you don't obviously use Yahoo Mail.
No, I don't.
All right, what you should do as a good brother is temporarily create a Yahoo email account.
If she trusts you, log into her account, have her give you her password, and
you
log into
do
her
that
account
too.
And make the change.
Yeah, you could install it on your machine, log in her account. And
it's just a web thing, so he can do it right over the web.
Yeah, that's true too.
Okay. Maybe I'll try that.
Yep, there you go. Good luck.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Yep.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah, one of the lovely things nowadays is that so many companies have a web front end to their email. One of the not-so-lovely things is that every single one of them works differently, and translating from one to the next is not a good thing.
Yeah.
But
instead of, he'd save so much time, and if he can, because he can actually see it, go in there and change it for her, saving her a lot of frustration and everything else, and he's going to be the hero.
That's exactly right. And everybody uses them nowadays. You know, a lot of people still use things like Thunderbird or Eudora, and they're much better about grabbing email from anywhere. But for those people who still use the web-based interface, they've gotten much, much better.
I had somebody still using AOL.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
AOL.
If that's your address, it's hard to change addresses because you have to tell everyone your new address.
Right.
Well,
right.
You just go ahead and get a Gmail account and broadcast.
Do it, you know, do it once. Yeah.
Yeah. Broadcast to everybody, and then you got it.
Then you can tell AOL to forward your mail to Gmail, or you can tell Gmail to pick up your AOL mail.
Yeah.
So people that don't get the message will still be able to get to you.
Mm-hmm. And you can. You don't have to get rid of your AOL account.
No.
Everything just gets forwarded to Gmail, which is faster,
yeah,
cleaner. The lovely. Excuse me. Apparently, I'm dying here. The lovely thing about Gmail is that they've done an excellent job with the filtering.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
yes.
perfect. None of them are, but it's much, much better.
Yeah, show me anything that is.
Almost never get right. spam in my Google account.
Well, it's just like I tell folks, you know, we recommend both Super Antispire and Malware Bytes. They go, well, why two? Because there is no one program that does it all. You've got to do both. Oh, that's a pain. Well, then don't complain if you get infected.
That's right. You can, you know, it's like saying, oh, I hated having to stop to get gas, so I just let it run out. Man, you shouldn't do that. Well, okay, you're right.
Yeah.
They shouldn't. We should be living in the Buck
Very
Rogers future.
Yeah, inconsiderate.
Right. But you know what? It is what it is, and get over yourself entirely.
This isn't like the movies where you see them shooting a gun. And it seems like they never run out of bullets.
They never run out of bullets.
It's a six shooter, and they keep going, doing.
Unless it's early enough.
Paul Casarino. Go ahead.
If it's early enough in the episode, the good guy can run out of bullets because the bad guy has to escape once.
Right. But later on, it's an 11,000 shooter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I don't get the correlation. We're talking about guns, and you got to call Paul Casarino?
Yeah, it's a long story. And
okay.
If Paul is listening, he knows exactly what I'm talking
about.
Because
Captain Kirk
Captain
Kirk used diamonds in his cannon to beat the bad guy.
That's right. That's exactly it. There's a logical progression here. All you have to do is follow it.
I'm not following that one. Sorry, that's so far out in left field.
Yeah, I'm Gordon Callum.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've been here all week trying the veal. Because there are so many different ones, and because they all work differently, it can often be a pain in the neck. But as Steve said, many of them, like Gmail, will let you forward to another service, and some, like Gmail, will let you pick up from another service as opposed to having to forward from the original service.
Mm-hmm.
But in either case, you can funnel everything to one account and do all of your email through it. And the beauty there is not only, I mean, you can tell everybody, I've got this new address, use this address.
Mm-hmm.
But also now, if you funnel everything, let's say, into your Gmail account, as you answer emails and they start answering you back,
mm-hmm,
they will have your new Gmail address.
Yep.
And so that can help. So, yeah, absolutely. There's nothing wrong with Yahoo Mail. As much as I hate to say it, there's nothing wrong with AOL Mail, except that both of them are a little slower than Gmail, and certainly neither of them has the
flexibility,
and certainly neither of them has the filtering capabilities that Gmail has.
And they're full of ads, which is a big negative against them. In fact, you may have noticed that. On my screen, I deleted all of the junk mail from my Yahoo box, and and they couldn't just leave an empty inbox. They filled it with video ads.
Yep.
She was
and
cute,
of course,
but I...
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, Gmail was written by a guy from Rochester, New York, so everybody should be using Gmail.
Well, it was?
Paul Berchtold, I believe his name is. At any rate, the basic idea is that pick a good program. And like I said, you know, you can, if you're still using Eudora or you're still using Thunderbird, which I still am, I'm not, you know, saying those are bad things to do. You can pick up your Gmail, you can pick up your Yahoo Mail, you can pick up pretty much whatever you want.
Does Eudora still work?
Eudora still works. There's now I forget what the initials are, but it's gone open source.
Okay.
So there is an open source version of Eudora. Hold on. Yeah, that's not going to work.
OSE.
OSE,
open
that's
source
it.
Edition.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Eudora, and it's—I believe it has ads in the corner, down in the lower left corner, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it still runs. It still does everything it used to do. It runs on Mac and Windows and Linux. So you can use it pretty much anywhere. If you're using a phone or a tablet or a Chromebook, then you're limited in what you can run. Some apps are available. Certainly with all of those, you can run the web-based version of those things. So you can always get at your mail from wherever you are. If you're using somebody else's machine and going to the web version, be very careful what you allow to be saved on the machine, and make sure you exit the entire browser when you quit. So it can be a problem to do that. But you know, if you're going to the library or whatever, that can be an issue. But in general, being able to get at your mail is no longer a difficult thing, and no longer limited to one machine, assuming you're using IMAP. There's two protocols, IMAP and POP. POP generally downloads the mail to you. IMAP generally leaves the mail on the server. So, and that's the other thing. Google lets you leave a lot of mail on the server. Mm-hmm. AOL and Yahoo don't. So that's another reason to go to them. But at any rate, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour of your life. But deja vu, you get to do it all over again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, and we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You can call us, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get to the phones, we should probably mention that although Eudora is still available from places like download.com, which may not necessarily be the safest place to download something from, we should point out that it hasn't been updated in 5 years. So although it is an open source edition, it doesn't seem many people have picked up on it.
And the current links point you to Thunderbird instead.
Right. Steve has posted a link called Comparison, called Comparison of Email Clients from Wikipedia, and it lists a bunch of them. If you go farther down the list, you'll see which clients support which operating system. So if you're a Windows person, you look at all the green ones, and you find that, contrary to popular belief, there's like approximately 2-3 gazillion different web email clients that will run under Windows and work.
And part of the thing too is I haven't run into a lot of people that use an email client lately. Everyone's using web clients,
right?
And yeah, you know, we try to tell them you don't have to go to 6 different websites to get all your addresses. You just put it in one email client and say, "What's that?"
Right.
Little postage stamp on the Mac is the mail client.
right. And many operating systems come with a mail client. The old version of Windows, of course, came with Outlook Express. The new version comes with Windows Live Mail. For those of you still using you have just Windows Mail, which isn't live anymore, believe me. You can do that. You know, if you're a Linux person, there's about 40 of them available to you, including Thunderbird and not Entourage. Starts with an E. Evolution. which is actually pretty cool. It's actually very cool. Evolution works under various forms of Linux and does some pretty neat stuff. But at any rate, the point here is that you can find a decent email program with just a little bit of looking and end up with something very cool. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Victoria from Rochester, New York. Hi there, what's up?
Hi. Actually, I have two things, and one is about the Soundbites website.
Yes.
I went on the Soundbites website this morning, and I registered, and then a page came up that said registration complete. Please check your email.
Yeah.
Nothing has come in my email yet.
Yep. Several people have pointed that out to me, and I'm trying to figure out what the problem is. I've been trying to figure it out for 3 days.
Okay.
I don't know what the issue is. Everything looks exactly correct, except that no email is getting through. If I do it manually, it all works. If I do it through the program, nothing works. It's frustrating me, and I get it. I want everybody to know that I am indeed working on it fairly diligently. I admit I took time off, a little time off yesterday.
Slacker.
You overwhelmed the poor thing with people signing up for the giveaway.
That's exactly right. at any rate, that's I don't know what happened, but I will fix it. It must have happened somewhere in the latest update. I don't know quite what happened, but I am working on it. I know it's an issue, and I will fix it.
Now, my question is, I have a Brother laser printer, and I need to get a new toner cartridge. And I'm wondering about these compatible cartridges I see all over the place that are about half the price of getting an actual Brother brand cartridge.
There are a couple of things about that. First, let me tell you that I indeed use a third-party cartridge myself.
Same here.
It's about half the price. You will hear people say that they are not as good. I haven't found that at all.
You have to be wary of too cheap brands, which are crap.
Yeah. Right. You want to get something that's somewhere in the middle of the cheap brands.
Right.
I completely agree with that. But in general, the third-party brands are as good as the regular brands without a question. Often you get more toner
in them as well. I've got both the HP 4000 and an HP 2300. And both of them, I use third-party cartridges. And this has been over, 15 years?
Yeah.
I've been using them, and they're fantastic.
I have a Brother LW, I forget the number, and I've been using nothing but third-party cartridges since the first one ran out.
We standardized on Brother because they're cheaper than HP to begin with.
Yep.
and mine is
a complete freaking workhorse.
Yeah.
It just runs and runs and runs.
Are there any brands that you are free to recommend?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. And just let me say, let price be your guide.
Yeah, don't go
somewhere
high, don't
in,
go
the
low,
of
go
the,
in the middle
of the third parties. Yeah.
There are also companies in town that will refill your existing cartridge.
Right.
I think there was a company up on, I don't know the name, this way we're not plugging anybody, but up and around the 12 Corners in Brighton.
There's a chain store that has four or five different stores around around town. And they will refill your existing toner, and they will recycle your old cartridges. Because one of the what they call the dirty little secret is all the plastics in the toner cartridge would last for a dozen cycles.
Right.
But when the toner wears out, you have to put in more toner.
So what these third-party places often do is you bring your empty toner cartridge to them. They essentially give you money off on a different one, and then they refill yours at their leisure.
Okay.
Or sometimes they refill yours and give it.
Sometimes it depends.
Yeah,
it entirely depends.
So yeah, because the rest of the plastics you don't have to replace every time.
Right.
So there was a.
It's just a fuser roller once in a while if they get scratched.
Yeah,
or
the fuser is like every two or three toners maybe.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that's why they'll usually do a swap.
Yeah. And in the early days of laser printers, you actually had a bottle of loose toner that you would pour in. And you replace the toner separately, the drum separately, the OPC separately.
Oh, geez.
And the cartridge is so much easier, but you're throwing away stuff that doesn't need to be replaced every time.
I can remember one time at Kodak, just got the new laser printers in. And, of course, they got the HP laser toner in that. And thing with the laser toner, you had to shake it and then pull that tab.
Oh, yeah.
The girl sat there and she shaked it. She pulled the tab.
Oh, yeah.
All the toner came down and went on the floor and everything else. And it's like, oh, they didn't shut the shutter on that one.
Yep.
I once actually saw somebody with a bottle of toner go to pour it in and miss.
Yep.
Ooh.
And that stuff That's hangs in the air for like an hour.
Yeah.
She was in a complete white dress. Done. Done.
Not anymore.
And people, they just sent half the department home. Well, anybody in the vicinity?
Several printers ago, I had Apple printers.
Yeah.
And with that, with those, with the toner, when you replaced it, you put the empty cartridge in the box, and there was a thing to mail it back to Apple.
Yeah.
So they did recycle.
Some companies do that. So, yeah, right. Some of the name brand companies will do that, too.
Now, you have to be careful with HP printers. You have a brother, so this doesn't apply. But those of you with HP printers, some of the newer ones in particular will not accept third-party cartridges. So before you go out and do this...
They have a smart chip in them.
They have a smart chip in them. Before you do this, read your documentation and see whether or not your printer will, in fact, accept a third-party cartridge.
A lot of inkjet printers are like that, too. The ink cartridge has a chip in it, and when the cartridge says it's empty, you can fill it all you want, and the chip still says it's empty.
Right, right. So be very careful. Like I said, Victoria, you have a brother printer, so this does not apply to you. But for the rest of you, be very careful before you go out and buy a third-party toner cartridge or inkjet pack, because it may not work.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Victoria.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're also seeing a general downturn in actually printing anything. That for most people, they don't actually need to print that much.
Yeah.
So photos are a big thing, and so we're seeing actually an increase in photo kiosks at, you know, like Target and Walmart and Kmart and, you know, Walgreens, places like that.
Yep.
You can have your photos professionally printed, which is often cheaper and less of a hassle than trying to print them yourself.
Yeah, just put them on a jump drive, go over to the kiosk.
This is pretty much the only thing I ever print anymore.
Yeah.
News for this show.
The show stuff, yep. So I got my wife a photo printer, 4x6 die sub photo printer, and she doesn't print often enough, and it dried out, and now it's dead.
Oh, that's the worst thing. That's the worst thing about inkjet printers. My father-in-law had a lovely inkjet printer from Kodak, and when he passed, we brought it home, and I set it up. I was very excited. Beautiful color, lovely printer. Didn't work.
Yeah.
It's pretty much dead because everything is clogged up. I've done all the stuff that you can do to revive it, and it just he apparently had not printed with it for at least a year.
It's a catch-22. Every time you turn an inkjet printer on, it will use a little bit of ink while it goes through its cleaning cycles. So you turn it on and off too much, and you run out of ink without printing. You don't turn it on enough, and it dries up, and you can't print.
Right, exactly, exactly.
So we don't recommend inkjet printers that much. You know, get a good laser printer. If you do want to print photos, think about how many photos you're going to print and if it's worth getting your own photo printer and dealing with that hassles or just having them printed somewhere else.
Right. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jerry. What's up?
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I have a question about the latest Windows 10 update.
Yeah.
I was running a laptop, a Dell Latitude D630. It was happily running Windows 7 for a while, and then it went to Windows 10 and got to release 1511. And then I tried to update to the anniversary update. And apparently the something they did in the anniversary update says they're enforcing driver signatures.
Yep.
So it got mostly through the anniversary update and said, oops, you have an unsigned driver, and then refused to go any further, and I couldn't go back. So now I'm hunting around for my Windows 7 original install disk for that Dell. But is there any way to recover?
The theory is,
10, now that the free upgrade available is gone.
Yeah. You're in the middle of an upgrade, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Did it tell you which driver was unsigned?
I suspect it was the video driver, but I tried everything, and I tried rebooting. I tried all sorts of stuff during the process, and it simply would not go back, and it would not go any further.
Yeah, theoretically, it should have either rolled itself back or run with a generic driver. Without
some of them, no. Some of them, I ran into a laptop that I don't know how the person got it onto his machine, Windows 10, and he said he was having all kinds of problems. I got the machine, and when I went to boot it up, it wouldn't even boot. I had to hook it up to an external drive, and I did some research, and his particular HP was on the list of not compatible with Windows 10. So I had to force it and reinstall Windows 7 to go backwards.
Yep. One of the things that you should be able to do is to go into the BIOS and turn off secure boot, because the signed drivers thing is predicated on secure boot. If you're not doing secure boot, it doesn't ask for signed drivers. So if you do that, you should then be able to finish the install and then go get the signed drivers and turn on secure boot again.
Yeah, the idea of a signed driver means that the signing is a digital signature that proves it's genuine. So it's not a fake driver trying to do something else or counterfeit. Right. The problem is, especially on older PCs, the companies aren't releasing new drivers and they're not signing drivers for older devices. So you run into this catch-22 where you can't put a signed driver on because there just isn't one.
Right.
And some of the newer...
The follow-up question is, where should I be looking in the BIOS setup for turning off secure boot?
Well, every BIOS is slightly different.
It's not in the BIOS, I don't think. That's secure boot. You can change your boot options.
Maybe. Microsoft has an advisory, and Steve's going to...
Got to find the UEFI firmware settings.
Yeah, those are in... Well, at any rate, Steve's got a... an advisory for Microsoft, and he'll post a link to that, and that should help. But it's every machine is a little different, so you're just going to have to do some digging around in the BIOS. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites members supported Jazz 8.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we... our sound bites.
And hopefully you weren't watching the video during that.
Exactly. Exactly. I was drumming on the table.
We have faces for radio, for sure.
Yeah, we do. We were just, somebody texted in about how to connect to the live stream, and there are a number of different ways to do that. Of course, if you can't connect to the live stream, you're not hearing us at the moment, but there are a number of ways to do that, a number of programs to do that. I personally use a program called Xia Live, X-I-I-A Live, on the Android machine. There's a program called, I want to say it's called Web Radio Beta on my Chromebook. But there's probably 100 billion of them that are out there, I think,
including
and most Jazz's, particularly, right.
Yep, Jazz's own app for iPhone and Android, if you like, as well.
Right, so all you have to do is download the Jazz 90.1 app,
which is
from your favorite store.
Yes, yeah, free.
The links are on the bottom right-hand side of the Jazz 901 website.
Right,
scroll down, you'll find it at the bottom.
Scroll down, what?
Yeah.
There's more on the page, what? Down? So if you do that, you'll be able to download the actual app itself, and then it's got a lot of things, including links to Soundbites archives and all kinds of very cool stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
Hi, good afternoon. First, I noticed that you no longer use a delay on between your phone and the radio.
Sometimes we do, sometimes we do not. It depends on whether or not we remember to turn turn it on.
I'll behave myself.
Most people would generally behave themselves, yeah.
Yeah.
I won't say anything bad. I've had a problem ever since I upgraded to Windows 10, which was just toward the end of July. I waited almost the last minute. I've been with Chrome in particular, every time I open up a new page, it sort of opens up yet another tab in addition to the one I just opened. And this advertisement comes up called Windows 10 PC Repair. The site is called reimageplus.com. And every time I go to it, yet another one opens up. I think it's some kind of a spyware or something. And I'm wondering if you've heard of this and what the right approach would be to get rid of it.
Well, the easiest thing to do is to check in the Chrome extensions and see if somehow you downloaded an extension for it. May have thought it was something else, or it may have come in with another product, whatever, whatever. But check to see if there's an extension in there. If not, then dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com, because if one of those came down, guaranteed more came down.
Sure.
That should wipe it out. Now, of course, when you run the Security Tango, make sure that Chrome itself is also not running when you finally get to do the thing.
Should this be run in safe mode?
Read the instructions, print them out, as a matter of fact. Yet another use for a printer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And follow along step by step. One of the steps will be to reboot into safe mode.
We are seeing some...
I saw your column this past week that someone wrote in about a similar issue with Windows 10.
Yeah, we see this a lot with Windows 10 because the upgrade process involves upgrading a lot of programs. And we kind of get numb somewhere in the middle of that process. And we aren't as vigilant as perhaps we could be when we're upgrading certain things. And particularly if at any point you ran Edge, the new Edge browser, heaven knows that it's a welcome mat.
Yeah, I try to stay away from that kind of Microsoft browsers.
Yes, I agree with you. But you know, during the upgrade process, sometimes it runs in the background. Depends on what you're upgrading. Depends on what's on your machine, right? It can run in the background. It could be an ad that came in before Google caught it or whatever it happens to be. So my suggestion would be definitely check to see if you've got some sort of extension or add-on that's causing this. Alternately, dance the Security Tango and kill it all.
Okay, thanks for the tip.
Yep, good luck.
All right.
And that one of the problems we're seeing is that a lot of the download sites, you know, download.com, majorgeeks.com, in order to continue to exist, they've had to find a way to monetize.
Right.
And so they are wrapping their downloads in third-party programs that often can then contain malware. Or at least advertisingware. So this isn't the example he's giving. We could probably call annoyingware. It may not be malicious, but it certainly is annoying. And so it's an ad for a company that's how the download site was able to make their money to put that file for you. We are more and more recommending that you go directly to the manufacturer to download something. Especially now, what we're seeing with all the Adobe Flash exploits that will come into your computer. So you get a message that says you need to update Flash. There are fake update notices now because Flash gets updated so frequently. The bad guys know that. So go to Adobe to download Flash. You know, go to Oracle to download Java.
Or just stop using Flash. Just stop.
Yeah, really.
In fact, most of the browsers, and they just announced that Chrome 55, is it? The next version of Chrome, will even if you have Flash installed, it will not tell the other end you have it. And wait to see, because most of the time the other end will then send you H.264 or it sends you HTML5.
Right.
You don't necessarily need to have Flash. And if you really do need to have Flash, it will then let it run.
The thing that most annoys me in life right now, and it changes regularly because I'm a curmudgeon, it's my job. Is when you go to a site and it starts playing Flash video.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got Chrome set to say no Flash.
Okay.
So these little things pop up and they're blank and I just close them and my life is happy.
And many ads are also Flash based. And so by not running Flash, you can skip a lot of ads too.
Yep, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tim from Trenton, Ontario, Canada. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
Oh, not too much. I just called to let you know about something I tried to mention quite a few years ago. If you're interested in Linux, you could try going through distrowatch.com because they have a listing of 50 different ones.
Yep.
And Mint's first Ubuntu's next, and Debian's third. Just thought I'd mention it.
Now, I appreciate that, Tim. Yeah, DistroWatch. Distro being short for distribution. It's what people call the various Linux flavors. DistroWatch. Right now, I can't pronounce the first one. Whatever. followed by Ubuntu Mate. Followed by whatever that is, Linux Console. Followed by Red Hat, FreeBSD. It lists all of the various systems.
And there's a button to pick a random one.
Right.
Let's pick a random distribution.
It lists all of them, they're about, how they work, things like that.
Barua is my random distribution.
There you go. And there are lots and lots of versions of Linux, as Tim says. And people are becoming more and more enticed by Linux, particularly as they have older machines that were not able to run Windows 10. They are coming to the realization that they don't have to live in a Windows-centric world anymore. Certainly, it's a lot less expensive to live in a Linux world. And finding a version of Linux that runs close to Windows still does everything they want to do, or buying a Chromebook and doing it all online, or buying a Mac and learning to live in that world, is certainly an alternative these days. And I will say that I've been running Linux for 20 years anyway, and I've never looked back. I get annoyed. I actually bought a Windows machine for a class that I had to teach, and I'm annoyed when I go to download something and it's either not available or I suddenly have to pay for it.
Yep.
What the hell is that all about? and this upgrade
the
nonsense.
Glow of them.
Now, it used to be the computer wars were Mac versus Windows. Now the big argument is which version of Linux.
Right. Yeah. So, Tim, which version are you using?
Yeah.
Tim, are you there?
Yeah. I'm using Ubuntu, but I'm using Cinnamon as the desktop. And there is a Windows phone being built. And that's React OS.
Yeah, if you've seen React, and I suspect you can go search for that on DistroWatch, the React OS looks like Windows. Now, you still can't run some Windows programs. It isn't actually Windows. But it looks like Windows, and it's finger-friendly, as we say, toward Windows users. And it's a pretty good one, and it's getting better every time.
Kind of like Wine built into it?
Wine is built into it, so you can run Windows programs, and if your machine is fast enough and powerful enough, they run just as fast as they would on a Windows machine.
It is currently only alpha, version 0.4.
Right, right.
But they're getting
there.
But it's
fun to play with, yeah.
But they are getting there, and that's the point.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you later.
Thanks. We appreciate that, Tim. It's always lovely to hear from our neighbors to the north, where some of us may be moving come November. But the rest of us, love that Linux. And it's a pretty cool thing.
Germany has said that they'll take any refugees that want to come over. They've accepted all the Syrians. They'll take the Americans too.
They'll take the Americans. Why not?
Nova Scotia's looking awful nice.
Yeah, they're right. There are a lot. You'd be surprised at the number of Linux distributions. Everybody thinks they can do it a little better than somebody else. You get a lot of choices in the matter. Yeah, Mint is they have something called a page hit ranking on DistroWatch, and it's basically a level of interest. Doesn't mean that's the number of people running it or whatever, but...
How would you pronounce that one for the
PC.
Air? PC?
PC Linux. PySci?
Oh, PC. Nice. Cute.
From PC Linux.
With a cat.
I know what you think, but that would require an extra S to get that first I to be short.
Well, I was kind
of
thinking...
The rules of the English language is...
PySci, maybe?
Yes, it could be PySci. Instead of a single vowel, it's long. In front of a double vowel, it's short.
Yep. Steve, you remember, we got an anniversary coming up. He knows where your mind goes to right from the beginning. Yep. There is no...
We had a customer come in this week with a printer problem, and somehow, I don't even know how it got in their Mac, they loaded the System 5 printer driver for their HP printer.
Wow.
Sweet.
So I started looking up and remembering the Unix wars between BSD and System 5.
For those of you who are interested in this, on our webpage, soundbites.org, you will see that we have been on the air today for 26 years, 11 months, and 24 days. We are heading toward the end of our 26th year on the air. We're in our 27th year.
Yeah.
Right. So at the end of this, it'd be a 27th anniversary, which means we're starting our 28th year.
Right. As long as my second marriage.
Exactly right. And here we are. My first marriage has so far at least lasted longer than that.
It finally lasted longer than my wife's second marriage.
Yeah.
So I've been married 20 years. She's been married 30.
So if you're interested at all in Linux, you can read all about it at distrowatch.
We start 28 years.
Yeah.
What? That is on the 5th?
September 3rd or 5th. I forget exactly.
Whatever Labor Day weekend was that year, right?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, my Google calendar will tell me.
You probably have an app that tells me that, don't you?
My Google calendar will tell me that.
Oh, speaking of Google calendar.
Yeah?
I'm torqued off.
Uh-oh, here we go.
All right.
The 3rd. Our anniversary is next Saturday.
Okay.
While we're on the air.
Cool. Cool enough.
So somebody needs to bring us a cake.
I think Rob should.
Pretty clear. I think Rob should bring us a cake.
Yeah.
Rob's not listening because he's he's doing.
But probably out on his boat.
Probably, but whatever he's doing, he's not listening to us.
No,
I was trying to go
into Google Calendar. I had created some anniversaries.
Yeah.
You know, in the calendar. And you try to go in there and delete them. It won't let you.
Since when?
Were they created from a contact or from the calendar? Because I ran into that. If you put a birthday on your contacts, it shows up in the calendar automatically. You have to remove it from contacts.
Right.
Maybe.
So definitely check your contacts.
So I got to go into that particular contact person.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So my friend Lou's birthday.
What a pain in the butt.
Well, it's the way you put it in. That's not my fault.
I don't remember.
It's trying to be.
We don't know. There's a lot of things you don't remember anymore.
It's trying to be nice and looking in your contacts.
It's called CRS.
Exactly. Yeah. Kraft. I get it. But that's look in your phone and under contacts, and any contact that has a birthday or anniversary or whatever, that will show up in your calendar, but you have to remove it from the contact to get it to disappear.
All right, I'll try it.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour, and this is for Dave's benefit. We're the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You're listening or running the board for Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Since I heard a good story on how to solve your problem, if you install an ad blocker, then available women on the internet stop phoning you.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah. So all those ads that pop up on your screen about women that want to meet you, they won't want to meet you anymore. If you install an ad blocker.
and you know, some of us, like me, I have ads on Ask Nick and on Security Tango because that helps defray the cost of keeping the thing running. I would prefer people turn off their ad blockers for those sites, or they can just donate to
the
site
directly. Yeah. And Google has a really interesting option for, what do they call it? Where you give Google a little bit of money and they will block all of their ads because Google happens to own the biggest ad service. And then you get a report at the end of the month about what websites you wanted your ad money to go to.
Yep.
So you can support the websites you want. You cannot support the websites you don't want because it's so hard for a computer to tell the difference between an annoying ad and a legitimate ad that people just end up blocking them all.
Right. All right. Our next caller is Jack from Greece, New York. What's up, Jack?
Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. I just want to let you know that I am a member.
Yay!
I recently discovered a problem on my computer. I'm running my Windows 10.
Yep.
I got an offer to update Drive 1 from Microsoft, and I agreed to it.
Uh-oh.
And shortly thereafter, I tried to access my Mozilla Firefox, and I could not. Evidently, it crashed. I called Time Warner, and they assured me that the internet was available to me, that my router and modem were working okay.
Yeah.
And that I told them about the Drive 1 update, and they suggested that perhaps that it was not compatible with Microsoft, with Mozilla Firefox.
You also have to be very careful, because Drive 1 is not a legitimate program. OneDrive is Microsoft's program. The bad guys will intentionally make fake programs with legitimate-sounding names to trick you into installing bad software.
And how would that have gotten onto my computer?
It was an ad on a website you went to.
Right. You saw that ad for Drive 1. And
it was not a website.
No, it could be an ad on a website.
See, once your browser is running, some websites will pop up a separate window.
And then
it looks like it's not part of the browser.
And the browser is always running in the background, just about.
And the other thing is, too, they have what they call hover ones, spyware, where you could be on a legit page and they've snuck code in under the radar, that all you have to do is moving your mouse around to a certain area on a web page. And boom, it triggers it to download behind it.
Because
the developer had a hole in their
right, exactly.
Code.
At any rate, the best thing to do at this point is to dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com. Print out the page for the Windows Waltz and follow along step by step, obviously following the Windows 10 section. And theoretically, that will clean out at least most of what's wrong in your system and give you control back to use whatever you want. And since you can't get there with Firefox, you can get there with Edge or with Chrome or Opera or, you know, any of a dozen other browsers. And once you're there and once it's fixed, then you can go back to using Firefox.
So are you saying that I clicked on a bad product?
You may not have had to click on it. It may have just popped up.
Well, you yourself said that you found an offer to update Drive 1 and clicked on it.
Yes, I did.
Right. So that may not have been a legitimate ad, and it may have been a fake ad. And they're so close nowadays to the real thing that it's hard.
They can make them regular banks. They can copy their watermarks and everything else. And
right.
You make
so, you know, it wasn't anything you specifically did on purpose, but you may certainly have done it.
Okay. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much for your help.
All right. Good luck.
So it's really tricky because you have to read the messages carefully, and they could have had a Microsoft logo on the window because it's very easy to grab the Microsoft logo.
Well, like I say, they can copy all the watermarks and everything else, and you'd swear up and down on a stack of Bibles that you clicked on a legitimate site because it looked as authentic as all get out. Matter of fact, one of our friends there in Second Life, his parents accidentally got that stupid message, and they said, "Oh, your machine is infected," and they got charged $350.
Yep, it happens too often.
It was bogus.
Yep,
that's the same company that I had fun with.
Yep,
yeah,
yep.
So what you should do is, whenever you get a message like that, whether it's Adobe Flash, Microsoft this, Apple that, anything, ignore it, and go to that company's website yourself. So you get an ad for Drive One. You go to Microsoft.com, and you'll find that it's OneDrive. And on the Microsoft.com website, you'll see an update button.
And
on the Adobe website, you can update Flash. And on the Apple website, you can update iTunes. Don't ever click on any ad that pops up anywhere.
And don't be seduced by the fact that it's easy to just click a button. In fact, the easier it is, the more suspicious you should be.
And the other thing, like I said, now this is getting, you know, out of hand right now. This company or wherever they are, that they're infecting your machine and they're, you know, threatening you that you got to pay. It's now on the average, from what I've been hearing, $350. Because the screen comes up and it blanks your screen out, and you got to call that number. And they're telling you, literally trying to terrorize you, telling you they're going to wipe out their machine because they're not going to get the virus and everything else unless you pay them. Just hang up from them. Turn your machine off. Call a rep, a service person in your area.
That you know ahead of time.
That can safely get rid of it because it is, you know, removable. Very easily, and it may take an hour or two.
Well, for you.
Yeah. And some of the time, if you catch it soon enough, it's just a window that pops up. Nothing is actually installed yet.
Right.
So turning off your computer, wait a minute, turn it back on, it's already gone.
Yeah.
But if sometimes that window will pop up and install something behind the scenes, then you're a little more
but
in trouble.
Do not fall prey to their antics.
Now, Microsoft will never call you. Windows will never call you. You
know. And there is no virus that they've got to go in there, and you've got to pay $350 for some company to clean it off. That is pure bull, and I wish they could catch them.
Most of the time they're overseas, which makes it hard to catch.
And, it is the World Wide Web.
Part of me wants to think they have to be hiring tech support, you know, phone tree companies, just like regular, you know, legitimate companies do. Part of me wants to believe that these guys working the phone trees don't realize they're working for a scam company.
I know. You're a very sweet human
being. I can't believe that, but I want to believe that.
I'm a cynical old so-and-so, and I believe that they just know it's a job and they're going to do it.
Yeah.
He answered the ad written on the telephone pole.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the problem, and I've said this a million times, we get complacent.
Oh, very much so.
We're in our living rooms. We're at our personal computers.
Yep, we feel safe.
It's the machine that we get all our entertainment and everything else from. So when this ad pops up, we are hardwired to say, oh, okay, because this computer is my friend.
Yep. It's a personal computer. I wish we would never have called them that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I get it. It's easy to be with. It's easy to do. We've all made that mistake. It's late at night. You're half asleep. You click on a link. I get it. But you got to be more careful. Those of us running Linux have to be a little less careful because most of the viruses out there now are for Windows and Mac. Those of us running Chromebooks are very happy.
Yeah, we don't.
But it's fun. You still get the messages.
But we said it, and that makes it fun. You're exactly right. I got one here one day. And the reality is they will. And so let's take that as an example. I'm running a Chromebook. A Chromebook does not run the Windows operating system. It has nothing Windows in it at all. Nothing from Microsoft. Zero for Microsoft in this machine. One day sitting here at the show, I got a pop-up that said your Windows machine is infected.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. At home, I don't have a Windows machine. I don't even know how they could have found me, but I don't even have a Windows machine.
And like I said, if you continue, you may be susceptible to identity theft, credit card fraud. And we're thinking, yes, that's correct.
That's correct. I may. And in fact, if I flap my arms, I may fly to the moon. So yes,
but when I hit continue,
and
I hit continue, they are going to steal my credit card. They are going to steal my money.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, just because I knew in that particular instance that I could not possibly have been infected by a Windows problem and that my Windows machine, which doesn't exist, was infected.
According to the security team at jessegroup.com, you have a virus. Well, that's odd because I am the security team at jessegroup.com. And I didn't know that.
It took me the longest time to teach the folks at RIT, my department, that when they got a thing on their screen that says the systems administrator says there's a problem with your machine, that they should stop immediately and call me, not click on anything. Yep. But it happens. Listen, here it is. It's over. It's done. This week has finished. The last show of our 27th year is now in the history books. And we want to thank each and every one of you for having listened and having spent this much time with us. And we appreciate that. And we will indeed be back next week to hurtle headlong into our 28th year on the air. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I specifically want to thank Rob Linton for giving us a new home and all the folks at Jazz 90.1. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.